The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to GVN's Talking Comics interview. On today's show, we welcome Paul Constant, writer-creator for Ahoy Comics' upcoming title, Snelson, Comedy is Dead. Here's your host, Martin Sexton.
Welcome once again to another edition of GVN's Talking Comics. I'm your host, Martin, and for today's show, we get to find out why comedy is dying. At least as far as former 90s comic sensation Melville Snelson is concerned. And you may ask, so who is Melville Snelson? Well, that's what we're going to find out today from our guest, Paul Constant. Paul is the writer for Ahoy Comic Book's new book, entitled appropriately enough, Snelson, Comedy is Dying, which comes out on August 4th. So we're going to talk to him about the book, his beginnings, the book some more, and probably about the book, too. So let's welcome Paul Constant to GVN's Talking Comics. How are we doing, Paul?
Oh, doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan of the show.
No, well, thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, well, I got to tell you, starting off here, you've got probably the most diverse writing career, I think, I've run into. I mean, because you do all kinds of things. Number one, you write about politics, which to me is like comedy all in itself. You write about culture, and you write about business, and a little bit of everything. So if you don't mind, just starting out, tell us a little bit about what got you into writing, and how did you end up getting into writing for comics?
Yeah, well, I've always loved reading. I learned how to read on Charlie Brown comics and collections and Superman comics. And
you're my man.
So right. it's always been a part of my life, and comics have. And then I, you know, graduated to books, but I kept reading comics too. And I always knew I wanted to do something with books in my life. And I became a bookseller. Actually, I worked at Borders in Boston and for a few years. And then I moved to Seattle and I started working at Elliott Bay Book Company, which is, you know, one of the big independent bookstores here. And I founded the graphic novel section there because they didn't have one. And this was in the year 2000, which I don't know if you recall, but that was like Chris Ware was just coming out and Dan Close's collections were starting to sell. So I looked really smart because I was like right at the tip of the spear of literary comics. And and I really, really enjoyed bookselling. But then I've always wanted to write, and an internship opened up at a local paper on the books page, and I got a job there, and they liked my writing, and I took over as books editor. But from there, you can sort of do whatever you want. At the Alt Weekly at that time, and I wound up writing about politics. I covered the 2012 presidential campaign and went to the conventions and did all that stuff. And I was really fascinated to see all that. And I kept reviewing books. And somewhere along the way there, Ahoy Comics editor-in-chief Tom Peyer, who's an incredible writer whose work I'd been reading for years, and he edited Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol, which was one of the, you know, foundational books of my teen years. He read my stuff at The Stranger, the paper I worked in, and he reached out, and we, you know, would exchange emails every now and again. And eventually I moved on from The Stranger and started writing for at a political shop here in Seattle. So I do a lot of ghostwriting of editorials, and I have an economics column in Business Insider and a bunch of other things. But one day, a few years ago, Tom reached out to me and he said, hey, I've got this new company coming out called Ahoy. And do you have any ideas for a comic? And I pitched him Planet of the Nerds, which would eventually become my first comic for Ahoy. I had written mini comics and stuff growing up with some friends from high school and things like that. So I wasn't completely coming into the medium new, but Tom is, you know, I think the best teacher you could hope for. So he really sort of walked me through the process of writing a comic, and it's been, they've you know, they've published quite a bit of my stuff now. I'm looking at my books on the shelf over there, and it's been a real thrill to work with somebody who's been so influential in my life, and to have them publish me out of nowhere has been pretty remarkable.
Actually, it's funny, you know, because I talked to Tom a couple of weeks ago, of course, and at the end, of course, we went into what new was coming out, and he mentioned your book, and he was talking about how great it was, and of course, God has a sense of humor, so what happens right when he was talking about the book, his audio cut, so I lost everything he was saying, so because of that, so I'm going to give you a chance to tell me a little bit about Snelson, and exactly what it was that inspired you to write this particular story.
Yeah, so Snelson Comedy is Dying is about a comedian named Melville Snelson, who almost hit it big in the 90s when stand-up comedians were getting, you know, TV deals and things like that. He had a pilot. It didn't go any further. He maybe went out on a date with Janine Garofalo, depending on who you ask, and that certainly didn't go any further if it happened at all. And he's just become embittered over the years, and like many of us do, he decided to blame everyone else for his problems. So he's sort of an embittered comedian who's, you know, doing his bit in front of smaller and smaller rooms, and so this comic is sort of an exploration of his last ditch attempt to regain fame and to be thoroughly unlikable while he's doing it.
And it's kind of funny because as I was, you know, because I read through the first issue. Did you like comedians? I mean, did you base him on any particular comedian?
No, I think I based him on more of a 90s vibe. You know, like when David Cross was starting out, there's sort of a 90s, like in your face, you know, like a white guy bravado, wallet chain, sort of like, that used a lot of hipster racism and like casual sexism. And it's like, oh, I'm one of the good ones, sort of a vibe. So David Cross, I don't want to pick on him particularly, but he was one of that class. I think he moved on from then. But that was when I started paying attention to stand-up comedy. And I certainly sat through enough sets by would-be comedians that I have a feel for that kind of a vibe. Yeah.
And of course, you know, part of his problem is that the humor he's trying to do, you know, because, you know, we're all trying to be politically correct these days, it's kind of hard to push that over now because, again, everyone is sitting there saying, well, you can't say that, you can't say that, you can't say that. And apparently he doesn't care.
Well, he's basically given up. Yeah. Yeah. And so I also wanted to say something about like there's a tendency, I think, for people my generation, like whenever I go on Facebook, which isn't that often, I see people my age talking about the kids these days. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know, like I never thought I would be appear with people who were like that because I was the kids at one time, you know, and I knew there wasn't anything wrong with me. So that's why in the comic we paired Snelson with some younger comedians who are, you know, non-white, in some cases non-straight, non-men, and because I thought that would be an interesting, you know, a friction between the two, and so that was kind of what I wanted to do there, was talk about the generational differences of becoming a middle-aged man and feeling like the world has passed you by and the different ways you can respond to that.
I went on your website, which I found your blogs very insightful. But one thing you said on your blog, one of your blogs that I thought was interesting, is that you said you felt uncomfortable talking about your own writing, but you felt more comfortable talking about your comic book.
Yeah.
And I thought your reasoning made all the sense in the world. So could you explain to me why it is you're more comfortable talking about your comic projects than you are just, you know, your other writing efforts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a pretty shy guy, and I you know, I write something and I instantly hate it. But that's kind of the amazing thing about comics is that, and one of the things that I love about it, this is so collaborative and it's such a team effort, you know? And so, and you know, I maybe I'm breaking some sort of comic writer's code, but I mean, you know, the truth is that the writer, the artist is really pulling a lot of the weight here, right? Like I can sit down and write 5 pages in an afternoon and then it'll take an artist, you know, 5 days probably at a minimum to draw that. And so it's just sort of humbling, you know, that these people are putting all this work into this thing that I wrote and improving it every step of the way. So it's just such a great, it's such a great thing because I'm proud of the work that the team did. Whereas if I were here with like a prose novel that I'd written, I would want to be curling up and dying, but I'm just really excited to, I'm really excited to share, you know, even if you were to hate every word that I wrote, and you know, I can't say I blame you because I do too. The art alone is worth it, and you know, the work that the colorist and letterer brought to the book, it's a really amazing thing to see.
Okay, well, speaking of the artists, Fred Harper's doing the art for Snowson. Now, was this your first time working with Fred?
We did some backup stories of Snelson in the back of an Ahoy comic called Hashtag Danger. So we'd done 5 little 7-page stories that I think that you'll get a chance to see before the book comes out. So we'd worked together on short stories, he called them. And so I knew what he was capable of. I hadn't worked with him before that, but it was really, you know, I mean, Snelson it's kind of a slice of life comic, right? Like it's people talking, there's a little bit of violence, a little bit of sex, but you know, there's no superheroes, there's no sci-fi or anything like that. But the amazing thing about Fred is I knew I could just write a scene of comedians sitting around a table, like, you know, making fun of each other, and Fred would draw it in this amazing, fantastical way that makes all of the sort of internal drama feel external. You know, like he's a gifted caricaturist, and he's also really good at like his architecture is astounding. He's a great realist, and then he has this expressionistic side that just like, you know, just blows you away. I've said this before, but it was I kind of understand what Chris Claremont felt like when he was writing New Mutants, and all of a sudden, you know, Bill Sienkiewicz came on, and he was like, "Oh my God, I'm making art now," and you know, my little X-Men spinoff book is now like this amazing, you know, work of art, and like Fred just elevates everything to this sort of operatic, beautiful comics stage. It's just amazing to work with them.
Originally, when you were, you know, thinking about Melville, did you have an envision of what he looked like? Because, you know, did you always envision the goat, you know, the goatee and the little tuft of white hair from the top of his head?
I gave Fred a lot of latitude with that to design. I mean, I some suggestions. I suggested, you know, I think I might have suggested big glasses and wallet chain and things like that. But it's entirely, you know, it's entirely Fred's work. The way that it all came together, and the great thing about this book is that it takes place over a little span of time. And so he goes through some physical changes too, which is really interesting to see. It feels like he, every step of the way, it feels like Fred designed him to look that way. He really understands the character like super thoroughly in a like a bone deep level.
Okay. Now, speaking of art, and I just saw this recently and I was all geeked out about it. Okay, so you got Peter Bagg and Sergio Argonez. I always mess up that poor man's name. We're going to do a cover for Snelson. To me, that was a major coup. How did you end up doing that?
Well, for Peter Bagg, it was pretty easy. I've been in Seattle for 20 years, and so we've bumped into each other a fair amount. He, in fact, when I was covering the presidential campaigns, I went to a libertarian party event where Gary Johnson was speaking, and Peter Bagg drew me into one of his strips in Reason magazine, which was pretty exciting. So I knew him, and they were looking for cover artists, and I thought one of the other things about Snelson is it's kind of a response to the sort of 90s alternative comics that I read a lot of when I was a kid, including Hate. And some of the autobiographical comics like Joe Matt and those sorts of things that had sort of like, you know, boys behaving badly. I thought asking Peter Bagg to do a cover would sort of give the signal that that's the kind of thing that we're going for with this. And so, you know, of course, seeing it in his art it was just amazing. It felt like it's his book. It was like, oh my God, I feel like I'm reading a Peter Bagg comic. You know, it really made the influences clear. Sergio, again, this is the curse of the comic book reader. You see these names all the time. You don't know how to pronounce them, right? Sergio Aragonés. Tom did that through some magic. I don't know if he like saved Sergio's life in a, you know, or something at some point, but the sketch showed up in my inbox one day. And, you know, my parents wouldn't let me read Mad Magazine when I was young because that was, I don't know, a bridge too far or something. It was too insouciant for them. So, but I loved Gru the Wanderer growing up. I read every issue of Gru the Wanderer. And then eventually I went back and read all the Mad Magazine stuff. But when I saw that sketch of this character that I, you know, wrote, I actually teared up. I actually cried a little bit. It was such an amazing thing to see his hand drawing something that I'd had a hand in creating. But his cover is super funny too, because it's Snelson standing on stage in a comedy club and nobody is paying attention to him. The spotlight is on him, but there's like somebody fiddling with the drone. There are like so many gags on the cover. It's just such a beautiful piece of Sergio Aragonés art that I feel like the luckiest comics nerd alive.
Yes, when I saw it, like I said, it was people building models and not doing anything but actually paying attention to him.
He really got the character. Yeah, that's exactly the thing that I was amazed by how easily he encapsulated the character of Snelson.
Yeah, it was great. Which now means I'm going to have to buy a copy of that one and then the other. Okay, a couple other just offshoot questions, just because I was fascinated by the diverse number of things that you've done. And like I said, you do political commentaries, you do literary reviews, you know, you write comic stories. What do you feel like, of the things you write, what do you think best represents Paul Constant? Or is it all a combination of all of them, kind of, each is a little bit of you?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been asked that question before. I mean, I think that I write about things in order to understand them myself. You know what I mean? Like my favorite nonfiction writing thing to do is to go on assignment somewhere and just be a brain in a jar and sort of like soak up my surroundings and then write about them and sort of, in the writing about them, I sort of understand how things work. And in the comics, I think I'm still doing that, right? Like Planet of the Nerds was me sort of trying to reconcile the 1980s with the current day and how different it felt to be a nerd in the 1980s and to be a nerd now, right? Where nerds are commonplace. And with Snelson, I'm trying to like, I think I'm looking at my generation as it's aging and trying to think about the ways that we're responding to the next generation and the ways that people are communicating and all that and in some ways failing to respond. So it's all different pieces of me. But I think that with the comics, I'm even sort of like tackling bigger questions than I am in my nonfiction. So it's certainly the more interesting, and again, you know, having the partners on the way is certainly, more fun. So I really enjoy writing comics. It's been a blast.
Okay. So again, dealing with the fact that you've done such, diverse type of writing. If someone were to come to you and say, okay, I'm an up and coming writer, and what advice could you give me from what you've learned in your career, what would you tell them?
I would say write anything you can. And I guess that's not surprising given my biography, mm-hmm. right? But I think Neil Gaiman has said this too. I got to talk to him when he came to Seattle before the pandemic. And, you know, he was a journalist before he wrote comics. Mm-hmm. And you learn a lot of things that way. You learn a lot of like hitting a deadline and turning in clean copy and making an editor happy and understanding that being edited doesn't mean you're a terrible writer who should never write again. It just means that this person is looking out for you and trying to make your writing as good as it possibly can be. So, and working for an alternative weekly back when that was still a thing, really took some of the preciousness out of writing. And, like every week we had to put out a paper, right? And so, it wasn't always going to be your best work, but you had to make it as good as you could do before you shoved it out the door. And so I think, you know, any sort of writing job that you can get, do it as well as you can and learn as much as you can. And every piece of writing you get will bring you a little bit closer to, you know, the kind of writing that you really want to do.
Certainly makes, and you know, you're talking about the editing thing. You said that was one of the things that, not so much with writing, but for, you know, I've been drawing since I was 7 years old. Mm-hmm. But I struggled a lot, especially early on. I didn't take criticism well. I was horrible at it. Eventually, I got enough of it where I learned to take it the way it was meant to be taken. And it's the same thing with editors, right? They're not mm-hmm. trying to tear you down. They're just trying to build you up.
Let me tell you, I hate being edited, but I love having been edited, right? Like, right. Like the piece is almost always better. There are some terrible editors out there, but for the most part, they just want you to look good and they're trying as hard as they can. And, but it is challenging. It's certainly like, you know, either bruises your ego or makes you feel like, you know, I'm a failure and I'm never going to do anything, but really, you know, you're all working toward the same goal. It just takes a lot. It takes a lot of effort sometimes to sort of swallow that pride and understand that other people have, things to say about your writing that you should listen to.
Absolutely. Okay. So if, and I fully imagine that Snelson is going to do well, do you have other stories in mind for him?
For him? Yeah. I think I have a lot that I could and can say with this character. You know, we did these five short stories about Snelson, and then I thought that was the end of it when Fred and I were done with the short stories. And then Tom said that, you know, everybody at Ahoy liked the character and they wanted us to do a limited series. And I immediately had a flood of ideas. And you know, even now I think, oh, I could do that or I could do that. There's something about writing a complete and total jerk that's very freeing. As long as you surround him with good people who are actually the heroes of the story, you know, just because somebody's name is on the book doesn't mean he's a hero. It just means he's the actor in the story. Something about writing a really horrible person is really, freeing and it gives me a lot to say. So yeah, I think there's always more Snelson stories to tell.
All right, so we got more to look forward to there. Okay, well that's pretty much all I got for you, Paul. But before I let you go, other than Snelson, do you got anything else that you you're working on that you want maybe our followers to know about or to follow?
Yeah, I am working on another comic that I can't talk about just yet, except to say that it's kind of the opposite of Snelson, and that's exciting too. You know, to take a break and write about a book that's, you know, fun that's a little more innocent. This is a dark comedy, and I had a lot of fun writing it, but it's fun to write something a little more innocent and adventurous. I guess otherwise, I just would say, my website is paulconstant.com, and My Twitter handle is at Paul Constant, and I have a monthly newsletter where I collect all of my writing into one place. So if you're interested, that's where you can find more of my writing.
All right. Well, very good. Well, now Snelson comes out August 4th, I believe. And of course, I follow Ahoy religiously, mainly because one thing that Tom always makes sure is that almost all of his books have some form of sense of humor in them. That alone will make me read them, and I love his stuff. So we will be following the book quite closely, and hopefully get to talk to you again real soon.
All right, thank you. It was great to be here, and thanks for having me.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to GVN's Talking Comics. Please come back again. Talking Comics is a production of Geek Vibes Nation.